welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And this week, we're finishing the story, the bizarre saga of the Bettsphere. That's right. It is a continuation from last week's episode, so if you haven't already, I definitely recommend you go back, you take a listen. Not only will you get some great story, you'll also get to hear Jason flounder as I pose quite a question to him. But we're not going to talk about it today. We're just going to move right forward here. Jason, do you have anything you want to say to the listening and viewing public? By the way, the reason that you haven't seen the video that we talked up so much last time, and why you're not going to see it this time probably, is because Jason has now informed me that those were screen tests.
I told you this last time.
Well, yeah, but not until after we recorded.
No.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm not going to have this fight with you right now.
In any case, so we are not... We might release a little something. I'm on a lot of pain meds.
Maybe some stills.
Something. But we probably will not actually start releasing our video stream until, what do you think? Do you think our next one?
I feel pretty confident the next one.
You'll be confident? Cool.
Unless something catastrophic happens with the camera this time, we should be good.
Today, we are wrapping up our coverage on one of the greatest scientific mysteries of the 20th century, the Bettsphere.
Greatest?
Now, yeah, I mean, within our context.
Okay.
Our confines. I mean... All
right. For us.
Like, it's all that mystery. Stuff that Einstein was talking about that he couldn't figure out, that's something.
It's probably caused by the sphere.
But this metal ball moves, so that's pretty... That's pretty intense, too. Last week, we laid out for you the initial mystery of the Bettsphere, the maybe haunted, maybe alien ball that invaded coastal Florida and turned the entire life of this Betts family upside down. Now, as you might remember, the sphere was observed both by the Betts family and by third parties, exhibiting a number of bizarre abilities and behaviors, most notably autonomous movement, which seemed to be motivated by some sort of self-preservation that leads to it moving in ways that seem to be contrary to the laws of physics, including moving against gravity on a dime without any apparent method of counteracting its own inertia. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, it's pretty much required at this point. That was actually the story itself. That was where we talked about what happened. Now, what we're going to be talking about is some of the attempts to solve this mystery of the Bettsphere. So, if you haven't listened to that, you've got to go back.
Yeah, you absolutely need the context.
You're just
otherwise,
not going to understand any of
your head will be spinning.
Yes. So...
Spinning like a ball.
Like a sphero. Like a
spherical.
We're going to take a look at the response to the sphere and some of mankind's futile attempts to understand it. Starting with everybody's favorite branch of the military, the Navy.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Coast Guard.
So, the story goes, almost cliche, as soon as reports of the sphere made it to news outlets, the Navy came a-courtin' to the Betts family. And it's unclear how the Betts family and the Navy first became acquainted with each other. Some claim, and I personally believe it's the most likely scenario, that the Navy reached out first. See, the Jacksonville Naval Air Station is only about 30 miles away from the Betts home, and the story goes that they were visited by officials who requested the ball for testing. However, the Betts were not open to relinquishing their mystery orb of special supernatural metal to the military at first. It wasn't until some of the more haunting aspects, especially the slamming of doors, the supposed organ music, which we talked about last week, why that's a little problematic to attribute it to the sphere, but the endless rolling that actually forced the Betts family to say, okay, it's time. We're going to give this up. They did request that the military attempt to identify it. If it was theirs, they were free to keep it, but if not, they wanted it back. They had, at this point, taken to locking up the sphere in a crate whenever it wasn't
It was just
used.
Too active?
It was just Wait. Too active.
So, it's still just their party trick?
Yes.
Up until this point? Okay.
Pretty much.
All right, just making sure I understand.
I mean, they're engaged in an active attempt to understand what's going on with it.
Right.
But it's just so distracting to normal life because, according to them, it's just you can't get it to calm down. It was definitely more active on sunny days, which in Florida, there seemed to be a good amount of those. And so they locked it up as a way of preserving their own sanity from there.
That's so, so strange. There's so many things that don't add up with this thing.
Like what?
Why it's more active on sunny days.
Solar power.
It's in a house.
Solar power.
It doesn't have to be set like next to the window in order for it to start moving.
What if the sun's electromagnetic radiation, not even its light or heat, but that radiation, what if that does something to the sphere and it powers it or something?
I don't think that affects it probably whatsoever.
You
probably
would not, think not enough power. Not.
Well, so here's the thing. When it comes to radiation of any sort, first, we have our own atmosphere. We have the magnetic field that actually dampens quite a lot. UVB rays and basically light rays and a few radio waves, not a whole lot of damaging stuff, not a lot of powerful stuff really gets to anything.
Okay.
Same thing like if you put a houseplant, I guess, farther into a room than if it was on a windowsill.
Mm. That makes sense.
Light rays are actually pretty important when it comes to transferring any kind of energy.
Hmm.
Kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah. So that's one version of the story, is that the Navy came first, then they said no, there were all these problems, and then they went back to the Navy. Other sources claim that the Betts went to the Navy first, and the Navy then happily accepted the ball for testing, which, if this is true, makes me wonder just how hard it would be to get the Navy to examine something for myself, personally. Right? If the Betts can just roll up and be like, hey, I got this weird ball, and they're like, yes, we will devote substantial time and resources to understanding this.
Well,
I be able to take the weird metal horse idol that I purchased at a garage sale when I was 14 and take that to the Navy to see if it's haunted? Who knows?
Probably won't. So was them approaching the Navy after the news publicity as well? Or was that before hitting the newspaper?
After. All of it's after.
So, potentially they had at least some sort of notoriety on the Navy's radar.
So you're saying I need to get my horse idol into the news?
To exhibit some crazy radio waves and movement, sure.
Maybe I could just throw it at a car. And that would get it in the news. And they'd be like, crazy horse idol falls from the sky.
Please don't do that,
breaks
Sam.
Breaks windshield. Okay. Man seen fleeing the scene. Apparently on a high dose of painkillers because his mouth is on fire.
Okay.
Praise the horse idol. We would take it and we would put it in the garage and we would put it on top of my amplifier. And then I had some candlesticks that I bought at the same garage sale and we would put candlesticks on it and we'd light candles and I'd play guitar and dance around the amp. It was probably the closest I came to being like a full-blown pagan, like...
Cultist,
yeah.
Okay.
And you're saying that this ball is of more interest to the Navy than that.
Yes.
Wow. I think that's ridiculous.
Well, you know, we each have our opinions here.
That's fair.
Anyway, let's turn the corner here and get back to our ball.
Okay. If you don't want to hear about Balthasar anymore, then we'll talk about the sphere.
Perfect. I don't.
I will post a picture of the horse idol on Twitter for all of you. I was actually going to have it here, but it's in the other room, and I'd have to go and mess up the lights and all of that. And I almost died getting behind this desk this time, so it's just not worth it. Once the Navy received the orb, they subjected it to a number of tests. Their first goal was to identify the material of the orb itself, which turned out to be a stainless steel alloy, which is number 431, alloy number 431, which is indeed magnetic. And this alloy is ideal for marine and aircraft usage due to its increased toughness and corrosion resistance. It is often used for aircraft fasteners and submarine materials. They also concluded that the orb itself was housing something else inside, that the shell of the sphere itself was only 1/2 inch thick. But it was determined that due to that increased toughness, the orb would be able to withstand up to 120,000 pounds of pressure, per square inch. That sounds like a lot to me.
It does. It sounds like, though, this material is clearly earthbound.
Common.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's probably expensive.
Exceedingly common.
But, yep. Yeah. Well known and common at this point in time.
You get a lot of things that are like, ah, we have the super, we have the what do they call it? Yeah, extraterrestrial materials that aren't found on Earth, and they're memory metals and stuff. That's not this. This is just normal steel.
Yeah, this is steel.
And it's not necessarily the steel itself that makes it so odd, as we'll see in a moment. The other thing that the Navy was able to identify positively was four different magnetic poles that were associated with the object, two positive and two negative. Now, the Navy attempted to get a look inside of the orb by way of an X-ray, and in the words of a Chris Berenger, a Navy spokesperson, quote, "Our first X-ray attempts got us nowhere. We're going to try to use a more powerful machine on it, and also run spectrograph tests to determine what metal it's made of. There's certainly something odd about it."
Okay, so in that case, we're probably talking about a really dense material internally.
Yes, extremely dense.
Because what other sphere that we know of produces a magnetic field?
What?
Earth.
Oh,
Earth,
I was going to say buckyballs.
But those, but that's a extremely dense core of iron with the mantle, which is a liquid, liquid shell or a liquid layer around it. And they spin opposite directions. So,
wow.
That's what kind of creates the magnetic poles. But
that's,
we're talking about
crazy.
Essentially two pairs of poles, which
yes.
is kind of weird. That
it is
X-rays
weird.
Are having a tough time penetrating it. Potentially, is it lead or something? I don't know enough about magnetism, and frankly, none of us do.
That's pretty spooky to say, man. What do you mean? We don't know how magnets work?
Not.
I'm pretty
entirely.
Sure. I thought we knew how magnets worked. I thought that was the whole crux of the joke about Insane Clown Posse, is that we do, in fact, understand how magnets work. But you're telling me that we're just kind of making it up as we go along?
Unless I'm severely misinformed, I think we know how magnets work, but
okay.
not, like, perfectly explaining it. Anyway, what I'm getting at, primarily, is that if it's this dense of material,
okay.
it makes sense that it might be able to generate a magnetic pole. But at the scale that it is, it seems so small and tiny that it'd be tough to do so. I don't know. It's weird. It's just a weird ball.
It's a weird ball.
Filled with weird stuff.
Well, and I like that you just said filled with weird stuff, because it's important to remember another aspect of the ball is that when it moved, like if you shook it, you would feel something moving inside. And when the orb theoretically or allegedly was tipped on that table in order to stop from falling off, it was like whirring and humming and as if there was some sort of internal engine.
There's something mechanical going on,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, something happening inside of it.
Which means that we've got potentially just a lot of electricity running through it, maybe, creating the magnetic fields. But then again, like, how does this thing power itself?
Yeah, that's
again,
the question.
And we're in the 70s. We're not talking present day,
yeah.
where this potentially, I still don't think it's probably feasible with something that doesn't actually create energy. It's weird. This is a weird ball.
It's a strange
like every,
ball.
Every time you try to explain one thing, it counteracts something else that it does.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. It's pretty crazy. So the Navy was ultimately able to use a 300 kV, I don't know what that stands for,
what does
that kilovolt?
Even mean? Okay.
I'm going to say kilovolt. That's probably not it. A 300 kV X-ray in order to penetrate the outer shell of the sphere, but were confronted with even more confusing results. They learned that the sphere seemed to house two other round objects nested within each other, both of which had a different density from each other and from the outer shell of the sphere. The Navy eventually returned the sphere, confirming that it was not government property, but that they couldn't say more than that. They had originally requested to cut into the sphere once they determined it didn't appear to be explosive or dangerous, but Jerry Betts declined. Berenger stated, quote, "I don't know who manufactured it, but I say it came from Earth. We do know that it's not explosive and presents no hazard," unquote. So that's about all that the Navy was able to do for us. There is something that's very interesting here.
And what's that?
The Navy itself does not explicitly state that they see the ball moving in any sort of abnormal capacity.
Okay.
What they do say, this Chris Berenger, is that he attributes the ball's movements to the uneven stone floors in the Betts house, which to me indicates that he is aware of the movements and feels as though he needs to address them, as opposed to just saying, well, it didn't move for us. But there is no explicit statement of movement here. So that is a bit of a puzzle for me. I would think that if it didn't move at all, they would just say it didn't move at all. But instead, they provide some sort of an excuse. Now, we talked about that excuse last time, actually. We brought it up.
So they looked into it then.
They looked into it.
They at least tried to find some rational explanation for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And I would think that that has to indicate that they experienced something with the ball. We talked about it last time, why that explanation really could not possibly be all that there is to this, because its movements were not just like, oh, it rolled away from me on a stone floor. But I'm just intrigued by the fact that they bring it up at all, because they definitely didn't need to. However, it's not impossible, though, for the layout of the house to be playing a role. And I think that that's important. So we did talk last time about how the Betts family home is a deeply haunted place in the midst of a deeply haunted place.
Right.
And maybe that has something to do with its increased activity at home.
So you think this is just a weird location?
I think that the location has something to do with it. I also know that there are different spots. There's like the infamous Oregon Vortex, where because of forced perspective and weird shifts in the topography, that there are certain like physical impossibilities that can be observed, such as things rolling uphill and stuff like that. But those are all just tricks of perception as opposed to actually happening. So it's possible that there's something like that. I think the big thing is, if we take it at face value, we have the Betts' own description of the ball rolling to the edge of the table. Right. And I actually saw a picture of this table in the intervening, so I actually wasn't aware that before it's actually a round table. So it rolled to the edge of the round table and then rolled all the way around the rim without falling off. And we have the,
that's interesting.
It is really interesting.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why you think it's particularly interesting you'd like to share?
No, I mean, it's just interesting that it's round instead of being flat. I expected it to be flat. The movements,
you mean square. It is
square.
Flat.
That's how I meant square. Sorry. What I've been thinking, kind of playing around in my head, is that maybe there's something internally that is kind of creating almost like a boomerang effect.
Ooh.
Like maybe the material inside, as it moves, is slowly shifting to create kind of like if you go bowling and you put a lot of spin on a ball.
Yeah.
At first, that rotation isn't noticed until later as the ball travels down the lane. And then it causes the hooks.
Yeah, interesting.
Maybe there's an internal system that is doing that you can't outwardly see from the shell.
Yeah, but then that takes you back to the base question of
what kind of motor system is doing that.
What's causing it?
We won't know unless we crack it open.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that is deterring us from doing anything is, from my understanding so far, is that no one has
opened the ball.
Tried to.
They,
A Pokemon comes out. That's really what it is. It's just a Pokeball, guys. That's what it was.
It's a Voltorb.
How dare we do... No, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant.
Don't cut Voltorbs open. It's not... I'm going to have to call Petpa people for the ethical treatment of Pokemon. But in any case...
Wait, that thing?
No.
Was it in the Pokemon movie?
No.
Did you just come up with that off the top of your head?
Oh. Yeah. I was going to say PETA, but then...
That doesn't quite...
No, because
fit
it would be Pokemon. No, it would be Pokemon for the ethical treatment of animals, because they understand. Are there normal animals in the Pokemon universe?
No. Those are the animals. There's normal plants, though, which is weird.
What is going on with Pokemon?
They're running out of ideas?
No. That's not what I mean. I always assumed that there were just other normal, like, dogs and horses, but there's not.
No, there never has been. Those are the animals, are the Pokemon.
But that then raises the other question. I'm sorry, everyone. That raises the other question to me, which is that if we don't have dogs in the Pokemon universe, if we don't have horses, we don't have cats. We do, but they're Growlithe and they're Pupper... Poochyena. I was going to say Pupperino, but that's not a Pokemon. That's just what I call my dog. There's Poochyena. There's a Pona, or yeah. Not a Pona.
Ponte.
Yeah.
Ponte?
Ponyata?
The flaming
Hell.
Horse.
Rapidash's.
There we go.
De-evolutionized state. There's all of these things.
Right.
So what does that say about the humans there?
They're normal type.
But they're not human. Like, they are, but they aren't. Just like the Pokemon. We'll do an episode about Pokemon. So, at the end of the day, the Navy was just a little bit of a bust. However, they gave the two pieces of undeniable evidence, as we'll be seeing in a little bit, that are so important to this case, one way or the other, which is the presence of other internal aspects of the device and the presence of those four different magnetic points. It's especially interesting because the magnetism on the device, I don't know if you remember from last time, was said to be focused in one extremely potent area. The ball itself didn't show widespread magnetism, but rather just one point on it would be extremely magnetic. And we'll kind of get back to that near the end as well. But that is an excellent thing to at least lay the foundation that this is more than just a normal metal ball, which will be important as we move into some of the conclusions we can make about this.
Right. Physically, it's actually kind of weird.
It is actually kind of weird,
yeah.
Which is
this
exactly...
This isn't just like hypothetically weird or right. Like someone saying it's weird. This is documented as being a weird ball.
Right. And that's exactly what Chris Berenger said is there does seem to be something strange about it. So... The next very strange part of the story, actually one of my favorite parts of this entire story, has to do with something called the Omega Minus One Institute. And I'm not really sure about most of what I'm about to say, but as far as I can tell, the name of the institute is a reference to one of two different things. The first thing that it could be a reference to is a mathematical... query or joke or even paradox, which has to do with the nature of surreal and hyperreal numbers. Omega represents infinity, and therefore it can be said, or omega minus one can be understood as infinity minus one. What is infinity minus one? Well, it's
one smaller than infinity.
One smaller than infinity, but functionally it is still infinity. But it's not. And that's its own thing. There's whole discussions about this, and that's been something that's been discussed since people knew about math in general. So that's the first thing that it could be referencing or pointing to there, is that kind of mathematical paradox or even joke. The other possibility, although to me this is a little bit more remote, I don't think this is what the reference is to, but... it could be referencing the Omega Minus subatomic particle, which was one of the earlier subatomic particles that was discovered. Its discovery then laid the groundwork for what we now understand to be quarks. So that could be the other thing. But again, that's just called the Omega Minus particle, and this is the Omega Minus One Institute. So I think that the mathematical equation bit of it is a little more likely to be what's being referenced.
So the thought-provoking...
mm-hmm.
mathematical equation.
It's also worth noting that, of course, in another way of interpretation, omega is the last letter of the Greek alphabet, which is why it is used for the culmination of all things resulting in affinity or infinity. But it's also worth noting that it could potentially be understood as not the last, but the second to last. So the kind of the penultimate thing. Or the penultimate institute, whatever that may mean. In any case, whatever the institute is trying to portray, it is very scientific. And it's one of those things that it's almost like when somebody who has a very niche area of interest makes a meme and posts it on Facebook and nobody laughs at it because they don't understand it. And then that person gets to feel all superior because they made the meme and they know what it means. I say that derisively, but I've done it multiple times.
It's honest. I mean,
it's a very big power trip.
I'm going to be completely honest. I definitely follow r/memes and the Reddit memes specifically meant for Redditors are very much that.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Like, I laugh at them now because now I understand them. But if I posted that on Facebook, like, no one would be like, I just don't get it. Yeah.
I've made multiple different memes relating to the religious structure of the ancient Near East. I don't know that anyone's understood them, but I've felt like a real smart guy for making them.
Sometimes we make memes for ourselves.
We do. Sometimes the best memes are the friends that we make along the way. Now, around the time that all of this was happening, the Omega Minus One Institute was either headed by or potentially solely comprised of a man referred to as only a scientist by the name of Dr. Carl Wilson.
That's my kind of institute.
Yeah, this is our scientist. That's not really how it works.
He's also the founder and the secretary.
And the fundraiser and the board and everything. You don't really just get to introduce yourself as scientist. That's something that a child does, yeah, right?
Sure.
They're like, I want to be a scientist when I grow up. It's like, that's great. And then by the time you're a teenager, you're like, I want to study biology. I want to study physics. I want to study subatomic particles. Like, you know,
right,
what
you have a field,
kind of thing you're doing. But Dr. Wilson apparently wasn't that way. He was just a scientist, and he spelled his name with two L's. So there's that. Now, Wilson came and studied the Betz sphere for a period of 6 hours, during which time he confirmed the multiple magnetic poles that had been discovered by the Army, as well as claiming to be able to intercept some sort of radio waves that were coming out or off of the object itself. But he wasn't able to make sense of what they were. Dr. Wilson also confirmed the strange and unnatural movement, which he described as outside the realm of the physical law. Interestingly, Wilson claimed that the sphere did indeed defy the known physical laws due to an irregularity in its flux density, which means the magnitude of its magnetic field was wacky. As far as I can tell, this is not a made-up term. It is not like someone said you have a problem with your flux capacitor, which would allow me to tell that they weren't actually a scientist. Now, this encounter was reported in a newspaper called The Citizen, which was published out of Ottawa. And I was actually able to dig up, and confirm that this does not seem to be a later addition to the story. As we were doing all of this research, I was almost certain, because the articles that I kept reading said, oh, it was in this newspaper article, it was in this newspaper, and I couldn't find it. And so I was almost certain that this was just a straight-up, made-up thing, and that after the fact someone was like, oh, the Omega Minus One Institute, that sounds cool, let's go ahead and add that into the story. But no, it's actually a real thing, or at least the newspaper article that references this is real, and it comes from the appropriate time period. According to that article, the Omega Minus One Institute was based out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and that's it. That's all we know.
Cool.
That's literally all we know about the Omega Minus One Institute. According to the paper, Wilson came to Betz. This was confirmed by Jerry Betz. And again, it's important to remember who Jerry Betz was. She was a very successful business owner. She was a candidate for state legislature who didn't do too badly in the general election, or not in the general election, in the state election. She and the rest of her family were very upstanding, respectable folks, which makes this so weird because objectively, this whole Omega Minus One Institute thing comes down to her and her word. There's no other documentation that was provided, and there are absolutely no mentions of Omega Minus One in any capacity other than relating to the Betz sphere. I could not find anything. Like, it definitely doesn't still exist today. I couldn't find any documentation or any news articles about an institute. I searched through like 100 years of Louisiana newspapers for the name Carl Wilson, Dr. Carl Wilson, Scientist Carl Wilson, Omega, Omega Minus, Omega Minus One, Omega Minus One Institute. I couldn't find anything possibly relating to this, which then provides us with a nice little problematic spicy Wendy's chicken nugget. There is no documentation of the Omega Minus One Institute apart from the Bet Sphere.
They either...
Give me the options.
Did nothing their entire existence of any noteworthiness, which there's a lot of things that get into local newspaper.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, lots of different stuff.
Like if someone was to attack a man with a horse idol.
Or if you die.
That would definitely make it in. I know, I would think that there'd be at least an obituary for this Carl Wilson.
Yeah, something in Louisiana for this. Or it's all made up.
That's actually not the dichotomy. The dichotomy is, it is either all made up, or it is an extremely secretive organization, probably masked by a different name, that is not spoken about because of its very secretive work, that for some reason, some way, the reality of this thing got out to Jerry Betts, but to nobody else.
Okay.
So that's the dichotomy here.
Why, if they're that secretive, would they let that slip? Why wouldn't they just be like, hey, yeah, I'm an independent researcher,
yeah,
and I've caught wind of your story.
Yeah. You would think that as he was driving there, he would be thinking, don't say Omega Minus One.
This
say
has
Omega
to be
minus one.
In their pamphlet.
Yeah. It's in the orientation manual. I don't know. I will tell you, the one thing that I did find, so Omega Minus One in general doesn't return pretty much any results other than this. And, well, first off, there's the mathematical thing. The mathematical thing, this, the Bet Sphere and the Omega Minus One Institute, and, strangely enough, a coffee house which opened in the Mansfield area of Pennsylvania 6 years before this in 1968. It appeared to be a student-run organization of the local college, which initially caught some flack because it was covered in slogans like "Tax the Church." The shop was ran by ministerial students and overseen by a Baptist pastor.
Ah, those rebels.
Yeah, man. They were on it. But finally, nothing much came of it, although it seemed to be a mainstay of the community for at least a few years. There was no mention of it in the local paper after 1969, when they held a mock funeral for the war dead of Vietnam. That's the only other Omega Minus One institution that I could find. And some crazy little part of me is like, maybe they're connected, but I don't know what a student coffee shop would have to do with alien spheres. But maybe that's the entire point.
Okay, so maybe his name was mistyped with a double L.
Mm.
Or he gave a double L. In reality, it's just a single L, like a normal Wilson.
I would still think that we'd be able to find something, though, don't you?
Probably.
Probably.
Maybe the last 15 minutes of our conversation,
yeah,
has all been for naught.
Probably.
Okay.
There is a decision that we have to make regarding the good Mrs. Betts. Did she lie about this encounter or did she not? It's very hard to say. But of course, I, being a trusting and foolish man, am inclined to believe that she did not lie. Now,
well, I mean, what's the point of cutting you off there?
That's
what's
fine.
The point of lying at this point in time?
Basically, to drum up interest.
Well, basically, the scientist, Dr. Wilson, has just confirmed previously established knowledge, right?
For the most part. He added the radio wave thing. Nobody else had said the radio wave thing.
Okay.
Meh. Other than that, yes.
I mean, that should be easily picked up, though.
Yeah.
As far as radio waves are concerned. Like, yeah, that's pretty typical radiation, though. But it might even just simply be a fluke in the observation as well.
Interesting. Okay. So you think she doesn't have a reason to lie? That's your premise?
I don't really think so. I mean, for the most part, I feel like this has basically ran its course as far as publicity has gone.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. If we take the next step on the flowchart,
yep,
of saying, did Jerry Betts lie? No. Then we have to look The next question is, does the Institute exist? Again, we've talked a lot about why it probably doesn't exist, and if it does, it's super secretive, but why would he possibly then introduce it to her? So I'm going to say no. Jerry Betts is not lying, and the Omega Minus One Institute does not exist.
So,
what does that leave us with?
Well, that leaves us with a theoretical scientist giving us potentially new information, but because we don't have any way to track it back to its original source, it should probably just be thrown out.
It leaves us with a person.
Oh, no, he had a different way he's going
to
go with that.
Who can travel with the sort of equipment that would be able to monitor and record magnetic fields and radio waves, who can give a passable impression of a scientist.
Oh, dear.
And who can find something to do with the ball for 6 hours, as well as a knowledge of electromagnetics to calculate a flux density and label the variations within said flux density as with or outside of the realm of normal physics. Therefore, we now have to take our chart to Mr. Wilson. Who is Mr. Wilson? There are two options. The first is that he is an unadulterated kook, some UFO chaser who passed himself off as a legit investigator, but in reality just goes around in a van investigating UFO reports. You know, like how I'm sure I will one day end up. Or else... and this is what I'm going to go with for my personal truth, because what we choose to believe about reality creates our reality. He was a man in black. Dr. Carl Wilson with two L's was a man in black. I don't have a lot to support.
I don't agree with this statement.
I don't have a lot of facts to support my conclusion, so we're just going to kind of hop, skip, and jump right past it. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I'm glad you have a story, Sam. Let's hop, skip, and roll right past it.
Nice. It is known that, as they were wont to do, members of the Aerial Phenomenal Research Organization, also known as APRO, had their nose in all of this, which definitely makes the previous theory regarding Wilson a bit more likely than the latter, but still... And after both the Navy and Wilson were unable to provide any sort of explanation for where the ball came from or what it was, they eventually convinced the Betts to submit the panel, or the ball, to examination by the Blue Ribbon Panel on UFOs, as it was called. This Blue Ribbon Panel was set up by the National Enquirer in order to assess any claims of material evidence of UFOs.
Okay, so the National Enquirer... does it have the same reputation back in the 70s as it does today?
I think it probably had a worse reputation.
I rest my case.
Continue. Sure. Well, but you got to think about it. So they were authorized, I think it's still standing now, at a value of $1 million to anybody who can provide material evidence of UFOs. Back then, I think it was around $50,000, but it could be anywhere between those two numbers. So they were authorized to provide a large cash amount because if they could actually make this story, A, they were the right people to do it, and B, they would sell so many newspapers, right?
It'd be insane. Yeah.
So I agree with you that the National Enquirer is not necessarily who I want to be bringing in as a source on my scientific studies.
Okay.
However... what's important to note is who was on this panel. So, Terry himself personally escorts the Sphere to New Orleans, which is where the panel was meeting. They came together once a year, and basically it was a two-step process. You took your material evidence, and you started by submitting it to the heads of APRO, NICAP, and MUFON, and then... if those high-ranking members of that organization said, yeah, this seems legit, then it would go on to the actual UFO panel itself. Now, this UFO panel itself was consisted of scientists, it was PhDs, and legal professionals. There was a former Supreme Court justice, there was a former Attorney General of the United States.
Okay.
There was also a good amount of scientists, as I mentioned. One of them... is named Dr. James Albert Harder. He was the professor of emeritus of civil, or he was the professor emeritus of civil and hydraulic engineering at UC Berkeley. However, there was somebody else on this panel. Somebody very near and dear to all of our hearts. And that man was Dr. J. Allen Hynek. Woo! Our UFO dad. I just love that guy. Man.
Yeah, you do.
What a guy. Anyway, so Hynek was also on the panel.
Cool.
And we've talked at length about Hynek. He ended up a little crazy. But you would. You would if you spent your entire life to chasing UFOs. However, his involvement with the panel, because we've covered in depth how serious he was, again, for those of you who haven't listened to the entire show, which is probably the majority of people, or who just don't care about UFOs all that much, Dr. Hynek was the one who spearheaded the actual government effort to understand UFOs, to categorize them, to label them, Project Blue Book, as it's known. He is a consummate scientist, especially during this time, and he was devoted to getting to the truth of it as opposed to just buying into the hype about things. So his involvement on the panel itself, like, it buoys me up even more. Even if there wasn't, again, a former Attorney General of the United States, a former Supreme Court Justice, Hynek himself would be enough for me to say, okay, this probably should have some kind of credibility in my mind.
All right.
Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Yeah, sure.
All right. All right.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now, this panel, Terry brings the sphere to them. They are able to confirm a few different elements of the sphere. I believe that they confirm the radio waves, but I didn't get that 100%. They do definitely confirm the magnetism, its four-pole system, and again, the strange internal makeup of the sphere itself. However, the problem is, this is a situation where you're trying to get material evidence of UFO activity. The Bett sphere is actually not linked to any UFO activity at the time.
Right.
There may have been a sighting.
It just rolls, it doesn't fly.
Well, that's true. But there may have been a sighting, it's something like 50 miles away or maybe even further, the night before the sphere showed up. But it's generally not included in reports about the sphere itself because it didn't seem to intersect with that area at all. So on that basis alone, even though it was an interesting find, the panel could not say that it was the material evidence of a UFO encounter. However, when Hynek stated this, he did say that it seemed to be man-made, but he added a caveat to his statement, which said that none of the people on the panel would be comfortable saying that it was an extraterrestrial object because, quote, they would be putting their scientific reputations on the line, unquote. It's not sure if he's trying to cryptically say, like, I think there is something more to this, but people just don't want to say it because they're afraid of what it'll do. But if you were worried about your reputation, why would you be on the National Enquirer's panel of UFO research? So I don't know what he means by that. Unfortunately, I have to say his assumption at the end of the day was that it was a man-made object. So there's that.
Right. And everything external-wise leads you to believe that too. Yeah. Again, like the material that the outer shell at least is made out of is fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
Like that isn't super inexplicable.
Right, right. However, when it came to the scientific reputations of the members of the Blue Ribbon panel, there was one man who did not mind speaking his truth.
Oh boy.
Telling us just what he thought. And that man is, or was, I think he's dead now, Dr. James Albert Harder. We mentioned him just a moment ago. He was the professor emeritus of civil and hydraulic engineering at UC Berkeley. He is also my hero. And he had some very interesting things to say about the sphere. especially regarding the x-rays that had been taken of the sphere and the ones that he would actually take later. These x-rays, by the way, our website is back up for now. So I am going to make a blog post, and I won't be linking the x-rays themselves because they are copyrighted, actually, under our good friends Astonishing Legends. So I will be providing a link to Astonishing Legends websites where they have these x-rays, as well as an analysis of them by a professional radiologist. So if you're interested, check that out. That's going to be notalonepodcast.com/BETZ2 will be the blog post once it's up. But in any case, these x-rays are the best physical evidence we have. Okay. Dr. Harder took his own x-rays. And then a few years after this, he made an official dissenting statement regarding the sphere being a mundane object, breaking from what the panel had said years earlier. He said it as part of the International UFO Conference in 1977. And there he stated, quote, he asserted, based on his X-ray studies, that the two internal spheres are made of elements far heavier than anything known to science. While the heaviest element yet produced in any atomic reactor here on Earth has an atomic number of 105, and the heaviest element according naturally on Earth is uranium with the atomic number of 92, Harder claims to have determined that the Betz sphere has atomic numbers higher than 140. If one were to drill into the sphere, he asserted, quote, perhaps the masses would go critical and explode like an atomic bomb, unquote, unquote.
So he's on board then with this is an alien object.
It is a non-Earth object. Or it is something that we do not have the capacity to make, even if it is everything is earthly. But again, that discovery or those other internal elements are something that we do not have access to. How many elements are we up to now?
I don't know. Just look at the periodic table.
Yeah.
118.
118. Okay, so 118. So 22 additional protons, at least from any element that we've been able to stabilize here on Earth with all of our science, even in the year 2019. That's what Harder believes that we are dealing with here, which therefore implicitly comes to the understanding that the sphere is otherworldly. He thinks this thing is full of elements unknown to our human Earth scientists, which can and will render the Earth a living hellscape and murder untold numbers of people. And he did it all by prefacing his statement with the word perhaps, because presumably he is the real mad scientist in all of this. I like to think of him just sitting there thinking, perhaps it will go critical and explode like an atomic bomb.
Well, obviously he's not the manufacturer, because it would take so much financial backing to potentially make this thing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd so it, he didn't build it.
No.
Which because of that, I don't expect it to really exist at all at that level. Like, it'd have to be otherworldly.
Oh yeah.
110%. And at that point, I'd assume that that material wouldn't be stable enough to exist that long.
Yeah, you'd think you wouldn't want to shake it.
Because,
which is what Jerry did repeatedly.
Usually when we manufacture really, really heavy elements, they disintegrate. They are so reactive that they just start decomposing into smaller elements.
Isn't that what radiation is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the energy basically off-put by that.
Wow. That's crazy.
And that's, yeah, that's...
It's wild.
How nuclear fission works. You take uranium, you throw some protons at it, it separates into plutonium.
And then what happens?
It causes a chain reaction, and all that energy that's produced is what creates the bomb.
All right.
Simple as that.
And that, yeah, so that would have a lot more power than a normal atomic bomb. If it was throwing off even more.
Yeah, which is why I don't really think it exists.
Right, right.
Again, like once we're talking about something that large of an atomic number, I don't, it would last
nanoseconds.
Maybe like at the beginning of the Big Bang, we'd have particles that large. But, oh man, maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's a seed. Maybe
Jason.
It's a galaxy seed that's wrapped in...
That's crazy.
Earth-grade steel alloy.
That's wild.
It's not.
Well, steel would be a universal element. I mean, once you learn how to smelt it. Smelt it?
Steel isn't an element. Iron's the element.
I know. It'd be a material, though, that could be found universally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it would also be so heavy that you wouldn't be able to pick it up or move it.
Yeah. In any case, Harder thinks that it's an alien doomsday device. For better or worse, this is pretty much the last time any new information comes to light regarding the sphere. Dr. Harder strongly warned people not to go snooping around the ball due to its ridiculously high risks, and as far as I can tell, pretty much everybody took his advice and stepped a little bit back. Now, it's pretty much unknown as to where the ball is right now, or if any other tests have been undertaken to determine...
Wait, why is that?
What do you mean?
Did the bets not hold on to it?
I think the bets still have it. We do not have any confirmation as to where the sphere is right now. It enjoyed its time in the sun, and then it simply faded away. Now, we still have some small pieces of information that get out after this point, such as Jerry claiming that she was offered $750,000 for the sphere, but turned it down, or the fact that it has still, as far as we know, not been drilled or cut open. And while there are a number of questions that remain surrounding the orb, the most obvious is, what the hell is it?
I don't know.
I liked Jason's galaxy seed theory. I know you weren't being serious, but I am.
Whoever knows. I don't.
It also sounds like an amazing setup to a sci-fi miniseries.
Oh, dear.
So, Disney, get at us.
It's a giant pellet.
For what?
The world's largest shotgun round.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know.
That would suck.
I have no idea. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know, man.
Well... The good news is, you don't have to know.
We just need to cut it open.
The number of theories that are out there for the sphere are daunting, but they essentially break down into two groups.
Okay.
You either believe that the sphere can do all of these things that it's been claimed, or you don't. So, we'll start with the I don't believe it camp, because it's good to get that sort of the thing out of the way as quickly as possible.
Hey.
The most common explanation for people who do not believe that the ball has any sort of strange or unexplainable attributes is that it is a large bearing used in valves in industrial equipment. Specifically, it is something called a ball check valve. There are a few famous anecdotes relating to industrial equipment when it comes to the sphere. The first is regarding a man named Robert Edwards, who was the president of a Jacksonville industrial supply company, who presented a reporter with what he said was exactly identical to the sphere that was being described, claiming it was standard issue industrial equipment that was manufactured in Connecticut. However, While the ball did seem to be roughly the same size and weight as the Betz sphere, neither manufacturer or reporter ever actually saw the Betz sphere, and we're just going off of the description in the papers. So you don't actually have somebody saying, I've seen it, and it looks exactly like this. They say it sounds just like this. So, eh. Furthermore, the ball...
But why would it be out there?
What?
Why would it be found out there? Like,
yeah.
It's...
There's no reason for it to
be
out there.
Okay.
The ball that he provided was not the stainless steel alloy 431. So it is definitely not the same thing in any case.
But theoretically, it could be manufactured at probably the same facility.
Yeah. The other most popular anecdote regarding a prosaic origin to the ball comes from a Mr. James Durling Jones of Taos, New Mexico. Or Taos. Taos. Mr. Durling Jones is an artist and claims that the ball actually belongs to him. He is a self-described sphere freak. I don't know what that means.
Say that really fast.
Self-described sphere freak. I don't want to say sphere freak anymore.
All right.
Sphere freak. I actually kind of like it.
So he likes orbs.
He's an orb guy.
Weirdo.
He has made a number of sculptures using metal balls similar in size and shape to the Betz sphere. Now, he refuses to say where he got the balls from, claiming that he would get a friend in a whole lot of trouble if he did, implying that he and his friends are criminals who should not be trusted. But, he says, the ball is his. He claims that he was in the Jacksonville area around Easter 1971, hauling scrap metal back home to Taos to use in a pendulum kinetic sculpture that he was working on. He ran out of room in the van and had to put some of the balls on the roof rack of the van, which then promptly rolled out and were lost.
Okay, so hold on.
Okay.
Let's break down that claim for
break
a second.
Break it down.
So, he's in Jacksonville hauling scrap metal.
Mm-hmm. Back to New Mexico.
Back to New Mexico.
To make a sculpture.
To make a sculpture. Why does he have the balls there in the first place if he's using scrap metal for this sculpture? While clearly these are a manufactured ball of some sort that he's getting from someone else.
Somebody who's a criminal.
Okay. So this doesn't make sense for them to even be there.
I agree.
Okay. Continue.
He even says he could explain the strange rattling which came from the inside of the ball. See, the company that makes them, who he refuses to name, drills the balls and then rewelds them, with some of the millings falling inwards and then being trapped inside.
What's the point of drilling and then resealing?
Again, I agree. It's nonsensical.
See, I would much rather think it's, I don't know, some sort of sand or other kind of like particle layer somewhere.
Mm. Interesting.
That moves more freely. Not like liquid, but still moves.
There was actually, it has been implied that the center of the sphere may be a liquid in the very middle.
Okay.
So I don't know what that does to anybody's science brains, but for people who are sick of the sphere,
Mercury.
Yeah, in retrograde. I don't know.
Let's keep going.
Okay. According to people who are sick of the sphere, this is exactly what happened. Mm. It comes perfectly full circle, and now we know exactly where the sphere comes from and what it was doing there. Perfect. Except for that is, of course, simply not the case, and it is perfectly ridiculous to suggest otherwise.
I kind of agree with that.
Thank you. Frickin', okay, there's...
I think that just does a disservice.
There is another podcast that I actually really respect called the Skeptoid Podcast with Brian Dunning, I want to say.
Okay.
And I actually go to him a lot. He's covered almost everything that we've covered, basically. And he, of course, does it from the other side of view. And I go to his website a lot for other source information and stuff like that. And I was just so mad because that's exactly what, like, the position he took is he went and he just took the, like, oh, the Navy says it's nothing, then Hynek says it's nothing, then this guy says it's a ball that he had, completely ignoring, like, the x-rays and the magnetism stuff. And that's not to, like, call him out, because that's what everybody does if they don't want to believe there's anything weird going on here. But on the very base level, in and of itself, we can at least confirm that he is wrong, because the sphere is not hollow with just some trappings of metal caught inside. It has two other spheres of different densities nested within it. So he's just wrong.
Right. He's just making it up.
Yeah.
I would absolutely throw that one out
pretty
quickly.
It's like back when we did the Rendlesham Forest encounter.
Yeah.
There were, like, people who came forward and were like, oh, that was me shining my flashlight in the sky, or it was a cop car that we turned the lights on because we wanted to play a joke. And it's like, it's just people who show up because they want attention. And if there's one thing that the Betts family has going for it, it's that they don't really seem to want attention. There are a few newspaper articles. They definitely do show the ball to people. Nobody's getting rich from this. Nobody's writing a book. Nobody's selling a movie treatment or anything like that.
We already kind of touched base on it, is that this is like their party trick. This is their thing that they bring out every once in a while. Hey, look at this cool thing that I've got that no one knows what it is.
Yeah, which is exactly what I think we all would do at that point. So
I would cut it open.
Yeah, well, when you have a scientist be like, it's probably a doomsday weapon, that kind of freaked him out a little bit, I think.
Well, I would have dropped into the Mariana Trench at that point, probably, but still.
That's true. And maybe that's what happened.
Right, next to Megatron.
Maybe they just, like, buried it, and it's gone forever now. Who knows? I don't. But again, it's verifiably false, this idea of, oh, it just came from the sculptor guy. So, whatever. You also don't have to believe all of these crazy reports to disprove the latest ideas. It's important to note that the movement is really only undeniably attested by the Betz clan and reporters. It is implied, like we mentioned, by the Navy, with Barringer's report that he blames the movement on the uneven floors of the home, but it is not technically explicitly stated. The Omega reports, while they do mention the movement of the ball, are of course problematic, as we've mentioned, for a lot of reasons. And the Blue Ribbon panel did not confirm independent movement either, but rather all reports from them say only that Terry claimed that it moved on its own and didn't give any verdict of their own observations of movement. However, if there's one certifiable, undeniable piece of evidence, it's the X-rays, and it's, well, two pieces. It's also that magnetism, as we've mentioned time and time and time again. Like we said, I'll be linking in our show notes, blog post, whatever, to Astonishing Legends, where they not only have the X-rays, they have them enhanced for better being able to determine what's going on, and they have a kind of question and answer that they do with a radiologist regarding those X-rays in order to get them analyzed. And this person's conclusion is very similar to Harding's, or not Harding's, Harder's. It is not that there are undiscovered super heavy elements in there, but that there are three different layers of density. And then, like I was just mentioning to Jason, that potentially that middle part has some sort of liquid fluid property within it. Okay. Yeah. So it's something weird. It's something strange.
Yeah. It's a little disheartening for me, because up until this point, what have I always been like? Give me physical evidence.
Right.
Let's do some tests on something physical, because at that point we actually have something to run tests on, something to observe, something to actually do things with. And then we finally have something physical to do this, and yet nothing has really been done besides for X-rays and picking up some, well, stereo radiation that it's giving off.
Yeah.
Not actually trying to crack it open and take a look at what's physically inside.
Yeah.
It's disheartening in a couple different ways.
Tell me about it.
I think the first major way that it's a bit of a bummer is the fact that even the military didn't really care about knowing what's internal.
Well, they did want to cut it open.
But oh, yeah, that's right.
They did respect it being the personal property of the Betz.
They didn't. They weren't curious enough to seize it.
And they'll take because anything. Because they could. They could have just said, yeah, this is ours.
Yeah, exactly. They could have just been like, oh, thank you for finding this for us. Here's, you did America proud. you know, like,
here's a you did America proud.
Yeah.
That's your compensation.
Yeah. Like that, they could have just done that and they didn't, which is weird. So it's this weird anomaly where we finally get physical evidence of something, something that we can test and to verify. And then we didn't, which is so frustrating. And now it's lost into the ether, and we can't do that today, which is also more frustrating, because clearly we have better ways, almost 50 years, gosh, it's almost 50 years, past that point in time, to where we can actually potentially take a better look at this thing.
Yep. We screwed it up, America.
It wasn't even our fault. So
think of how quickly we could have won Vietnam if we had a doomsday device.
You did hear what you said, right?
Yeah, I did. It was terrible.
You're not wrong. Vietnam would have ended.
So would everything else.
Yes.
So the other piece of evidence, as we've mentioned like 100 times now, is this strange quadrupolar magnetism exhibited by the sphere. Here's something that's really interesting. Really, really interesting to me. I looked up quadrupolar magnetism.
Mm-hmm.
Its most common application is in high-speed particle accelerators.
That's cool.
It's very cool. It's very interesting. I don't know if that has anything to do with, again, that one intensely magnetic spot where it is only one part of the sphere that is actually focused magnetism, as if those are creating some sort of a focused magnetic beam or whatever. I don't even know. But it is not just something that's like, ah, we put this in a valve to plug things. Like, this
right.
has well, the I mean, trappings of an advanced scientific piece of whatever.
Magnetic fields are also used to increase plasma to a high enough speed to potentially run off nuclear fusion generators, which is cool.
Yeah.
But, like, if we're talking about a particle accelerator, those are huge.
Oh, yeah.
They're giant facilities.
Yeah.
So it's, is this a piece of that?
Could be.
Is it some, but then again, why would it be essentially in a forest fire? There are too many questions.
And this is how life works.
And not enough things to potentially
this
answer.
Is how life works, people. Life isn't a, oh, we found something, we did tests, and then we understand it now. Life is a frustrating mix of questions that are never answered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is a bummer. Anything else that we have on the Star thing?
Other non-ghost or alien explanations include a tidal measurer, which would be attached to a buoy in the ocean and then used to monitor wave patterns and the like. I don't know anything about that, so I'll say that's fair. This is intriguing because the 431 alloy, as we mentioned, is particularly popular in marine applications.
Right.
Likewise, it's been suggested in that same vein that the object may have been a sea bottom marker, basically a signpost used by submarines in order to provide a stable reference point for missile launches. However, again, we run into some issues with this because the Navy gave it back to the Betts and specifically said that it wasn't theirs. Now, there is the possibility that this was some sort of highly classified thing at the time. I don't know for sure. And they were just playing it off because obviously it was already out of place. And so it wasn't doing any good anyway. So it's better than revealing their entire secret plan.
Well, still just confiscate it.
Yeah. Yep. So, those are the best non-crazy explanations.
Oh, boy.
My favorite of the crazy explanations that I think that it actually probably is, if I had my druthers.
Besides for, you know, a galaxy seed.
Well, that's the best one. Gosh. We could really do something with that. The best option for me is that it is some sort of a autonomous drone that was used by an advanced civilization in order to monitor Earth. It then became damaged, which could also potentially lead to the reason as to why it did not exhibit the same kind of movement once it was out of the Betts' home. Potentially the transporting of it or the different tests that it was subjected to further damaged it and stopped the movement. But what's really interesting, as you can see on the x-rays that are provided, is that there are three different spots within the center of the device that have kind of a bloom effect. And it's been suggested that whatever this is potentially a flaw within the device that could account for it not fulfilling its original purpose. There's really not a good reason or way for it to be where it was. So we also have to remember that it appeared right before or during a massive fire that seemed to come out of nowhere. I think it's entirely possible that this thing legitimately crash landed, broke its flying ability, and then as it was subjected to more testing or even just it kind of lost power over time, it no longer was able to do any sort of autonomous movement. I know that that is also effectively just me making an explanation as to why it moves when the people who thinks it's something weird say it moves, but it doesn't move when the scientists are looking at it. So that is what it is. But that's probably my favorite normal explanation.
Okay.
You got anything to say about that?
Besides the fact that it doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
Okay. Doesn't make any sense.
Thanks, buddy.
So, I mean, like, okay. So, theoretically, if it's using, like, magnetic waves or magnetism to move.
Yes.
And fly.
Yes.
The amount of, like, magnetic power it would have to push out in order to push itself away from trees is so incredibly high that it would just be completely destructive. It also
why would, Magnets don't work on trees.
They don't. Unless you're able to up the voltage of your magnetic field enough. Theoretically, if you have enough power, you can work with anything on a magnetic scale. But I'm talking about so much power that it's incomprehensible. It's like it would, anything that is remotely close to being metallic in property would be thrown away from this thing at such speeds that it'd be insane. It would be stupid powerful if magnetism and magnetic fields were used for its propulsion system.
Okay.
I don't really think it's much of a like an actual ground drone either.
Okay.
Mainly because it's perfectly smooth, besides for the edging of the triangle. Because you would think if it's going to be something like a rover, well, rovers, all their wheels are textured quite well, so they can travel around.
Okay.
So it doesn't make a lot of sense if it was some sort of ground terrain mapping system either.
Right.
I think it's a weird ball that someone put in the middle of a fire after the fire was done.
Why?
There's no soot on it. There's no.
But why did
example.
They put it there?
To mess with us? I don't know.
I guess.
Like, there's just, it's inexplicable.
That's fair.
In so many different ways. There's so many different things about the ball that just doesn't line up together and actively contradict what you'd expect to find.
Yeah.
And that's the issue with it.
Yeah. It is.
Is that I would first, when we started talking about what it was, I expected it to be, again, like a sphero, which is essentially a gyroscope that has a motor and some wheels attached to it to help it move around, which it doesn't seem like it's that after we have the x-rays. So its movement capability is not particularly something familiar with. The fact that it does have, again, kind of like several different cores makes a little bit more sense for providing a magnetic field of some sort. Four poles, I don't really know much about, so that I can't really talk confidently on. But it definitely doesn't sound like it has really machinery in there to create audio or radio waves. So it's this really odd thing that we need to crack open. But we can't, because it doesn't exist any longer.
Or at least we don't know where it is.
Exactly. Good
enough. So functionally, it doesn't
exist anymore.
Yeah. It's like when your friend moves to Arkansas. They might as well be dead. That's true. In any case, that's one explanation. And I agree that it doesn't... I didn't know that about magnets, that anything could be magnetic. That's pretty wild. But...
So, the only reason why I know that is because Kyle Hill did it because science on Magneto being able to rip the metal. Did you watch X-Men?
Which one?
One or two or something like that. Remember when Magneto was locked up into
the acrylic. Metal land? Yeah.
Yeah. And then Mystique injected one of the guards with metal into his blood.
Oh, yeah.
And then he pulled that metal out. Well, the way that iron works in blood is that once it is in blood, it's not really iron anymore. It oxidizes.
Yeah.
So for Magneto to have pulled that trick, he would have to have been powerful enough to where he could manipulate the magnetic fields with the plastic cage that he was already in. Like, he would
interesting.
Be powerful enough, because at that point, again, like, you're talking about an oxidized particle. Like, it's really, really small, and you're talking about a bond that you'd have to rip apart first before you're able to even pull the iron. And if you're able to do that, then you're, like, at such a level where you can basically pull the magnets off of any, or be magnetic to anything.
So you're saying to me that Star Trek, not Star Trek, God damn,
X-Men,
I want to watch
did
Star
a
Trek
really
so
cool thing, but it
it's
wouldn't
not
have actually been science
viable.
Pop. Yeah, exactly.
Interesting.
Which is crazy to think of. That's, just wild, man. Yeah, superheroes wild. Not being physically possible.
I hate it. It's sad.
So anyway, really cool.
Probably not it.
Probably
the
not it.
Other option is it is a haunted ball. The third option, I guess, is that it is an alien doomsday device. There's all of this weird ancient civilizations sort
well,
of
so if it's
idea.
Like, if it's an alien doomsday device,
okay.
Why aren't the extremely heavy particles interacting with the other particles already inside.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, for example, I think I might have talked about it before, but one of our issues with making even smaller computer chips at this point in time is that if you make a chip, basically, or a transistor, if you make it one particle wide,
okay,
and the gates, when they open, you start to get to a quantum issue where particles, electrons traveling through, can just, because of quantum physics, just end up on the other side of the gate and cause basically a false on-off. So if we're talking about these highly interactive particles, potentially, what's stopping them from just, from a quantum mechanic level, just kind of appearing and interacting with one another?
Nothing?
I don't know. Quantum mechanics are weird. But I would assume that at some point in time, those particles, no matter how strong the bonds are, that they would interact with each other at some point.
And then that would go off. That would trigger it automatically.
Yeah.
But that is based on our limited understanding. And it's a cop-out, but a further advanced civilization may be able to counteract that somehow.
Sure, maybe.
Possibly. I don't think it's a doomsday device. I think it might be haunted, but for me, it's that drone idea. I know all of your things, good objections, good options. I still think it's a drone that's not working. That's me personally.
Okay.
What do you think?
Okay. I don't know what I think, man. I think I want to see it. I just want to cut it in half.
Just let me get into it. All right. Does it expand the potential for the unknown in your mind?
No.
Damn it.
Not one bit.
Not after 106 episodes.
No,
and
because...
this one thing that we really genuinely don't know what it is.
Because all that we can verify are these x-rays. That's
it.
And those are the only thing that was confirmed by a third party.
Yeah.
So, generally speaking, if you make a claim, it gets peer-reviewed if you're a scientist. And if that holds up by multiple peers, then your claim is typically taken as fact or theory or anything like that. It's initially true. We don't have a lot of that with a lot of the claims that this thing does. And because of that, you can't take everything as being fact with what's been described with it. And we don't have it anymore, so we can't do those tests now. So it's frustrating.
Jason's frustrated.
It's frustrating.
I'm delighted.
It's cool. But again, all this information, besides for potentially the fact that it has three rings inside of it, or I guess several other spheres inside of it, nothing else is proven.
Mm-hmm. And that is what the...
undeniably.
What the radiologist himself says. He says something along the lines of, in radiology, one angle means no angle. It's impossible to tell exactly what's going on here. For all we know, it may be that these are not other spheres inside of it, but rather just like a ring or a hoop or something like that. We just don't know because of the way that we only have the one x-ray from the one angle.
Right.
And that is a shame, to be sure. I think that where we land with it is that it's something more mysterious than it may first appear. It's more mysterious than just an industrial equipment. It's more mysterious than just a sea bottom marker or something.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more than meets the eye on it, for sure.
But it is not something where you just have to ignore all of it in order to come to a non-supernatural or paranormal explanation. Like, it probably does have a normal explanation somewhere. It may even be one of those things that's like, well, it's a prototype of something that never saw the light. It's something that the government is working on or whatever. Again, presumably they would have just taken it back at that point, unless they didn't know, which is always a possibility.
They might not have gotten the clearance for it. That's
One of the biggest complaints with the idea that the U.S. government is conducting a cover-up of UFOs is that they simply do not seem to be that organized in order to pull it off. So it's entirely possible that this is something that should not have gotten into public hands, but the people at the base, being just normal servicemen and women, were not briefed on it, and therefore,
I mean, it could have been left by whoever was fighting the forest fire.
Yeah,
you know, it could have been something that was accidentally dropped during that transition,
or it could be from another world, or it could be possessed by the spirit.
I think of at the end of the day, what we absolutely know is nothing about it. It's a mystery.
So, the last 2 hours of your life were absolutely wasted.
That's how I feel.
Good. Me too.
Perfect.
And I love that. Because at the end of the day, is not all of our lives absolutely wasted as we are subsumed by the sands of time? And everything we've ever done and everyone we've ever known will pass away?
Man, those painkillers are really feeling good, don't they?
Yeah, man. I'm ready to face death.
So now that we've gone full circle with this, what else do we need to knock out today, Sam? What else do we need to cover?
Not a lot. We don't have any new patrons. If you are interested in becoming one of our patrons, you can go to patreon.com/notalonepodcast to learn more about supporting your favorite show. That's right, I said it. And are able to just keep... What? Hey. You're able to help us keep these ridiculously giant lights on that Jason has set up.
I think they're great.
They are very good. I like them a lot. We also, though, do have a few people that we'd like to thank for leaving us iTunes reviews. There's quite a few of them here, so I'm going to go ahead and thank... I don't know if we thank this person, but I'm going to thank them again because their name is so metal. I would like to begin by thanking Beachlord Thrash Felon.
You definitely called that out last week.
Did I?
Yep.
That's fantastic. It's worth another one. We'd like to thank The Dubster, Atlas Strand, Bex413, and On2019. And we're going to read Atlas Strand's review. They say, clever, laid back, excellence. Over the past year, I've listened to every episode, and each moment has been wonderful. Ooh. Sam and Jason have an excellent dynamic of skepticism and belief that never becomes antagonistic, as they are two friends talking about the most unsettling phenomena. The show also knows how to laugh and not take itself too seriously while maintaining professional presentation. Keep up the good works, folks. I agree with Jason about Jeff, the talking mongoose. I don't remember what your conclusion was other than it was probably nothing.
I've honestly
blocked
everything out that I possibly can with Jeff.
You know, the thing about Jeff was that not only is it such a good story, but it was also the fact that I didn't even tell you anything about what we were covering.
That was horrible.
And you just came, sat down, and I just basically shot you in the face with a haunted mongoose.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It's so good. Anyway, thank you for your reviews. If you'd like to leave us a review, you can do so on the iTunes store. For all of those of you upgrading to macOS Catalina in the next few weeks, there will no longer be an iTunes store. There will be only Podcasts app. Only Podcasts app. For everybody else, I think it'll still be there. Actually, I don't know. We'll have to see. In any case...
It's going to be a bright new world.
Brave new day. In any case, we would just like to thank you all for tuning in, listening, and stay tuned on our next episode. I don't know what it's going to be. I never do.
Sounds about right.
Jason is thinking that we will begin uploading our video at that point, and you will be able to join us on a visual journey.
If everything is smooth, don't ever touch the green screen like that again.
Why?
Because it causes all sorts of issues.
Oh, no. I'm sorry, screen. Do we need to iron it? It's a little wrinkly.
I don't have an issue with that. The issue that I've had so far is the shadows that we cast on it, which is why I put the light higher up, and also the reflective light that bounces from it onto us, because that drastically...
You do have some green on the side of your face still.
Yeah, I know, which is why we gotta look forward. Okay.
Anyway, so...
We might have to move this even farther forward.
Wow.
I'm not sure.
We'll
then
figure.
Then the framing all gets... It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great. In any case, you can find us on Twitter at NotAlonePod. You can find me on Twitter at BeerLordElfBane. You can find Jason on Twitter at...
Mighty Moit.
Mighty Moit. You can find us on Facebook and join our Facebook community. Remember, we are not alone, a community for the strange. Our website is up for now. We are going to eventually get it redone here pretty quick. And I just don't like it. It just makes me feel bad. So we'll just see how long that stays up. I actually did let it die for a longer period of time than ever before until I finally felt really guilty and was like, all right, we got to bring it back. But and you can always email us at notalonepodcast@gmail.com.
Sam, what if I have a really great story that I want to share with you?
That's a great question. It is now the best month of the year, September, which is penultimate to the spookiest month of the year, October. At the end of October, traditionally, we have done a listener special. We are now, and technically always, accepting stories for that listener special at notalonepodstories@gmail.com is our repository for all of your spooky stories that we might end up using during our listener special. We do accept those in either written form or if you want to do an audio or video version. Beyond that, I think that's it. I did it last week.
You did. Remember, whether you're posing as a scientist or you're officially on a panel for UFOs, you are
not alone.